So this week is Parshat Vayishlach, and Yaakov has been the star of the show. I guess perhaps a little hard to say exactly when that happened. We can argue in retrospect from the very beginning when they were born, back in Parshat Toldot. Going from Toldot through Vayetse, again, it becomes very clear that Yaakov, the story is about Yaakov. Some point by next week's Parsha, Yaakov is going to become secondary, and the next generation are going to become more primary. There's going to be some elements in this week's Parsha as well, which will already hint to us about how they're going to move on. I want to start by raising a question which is completely irrelevant to most of what I'm going to say, I think. But I never actually know, but maybe it is relevant. And that is, as we proceed in this week's Parsha, there's reason for Yaakov to part ways with three of his children. When I say part ways, is that three of his children do something which is absolutely outrageous. You know, if we were to judge ourselves in terms of when we look at Judaism, we talk about three major sins, and that's Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aroyot, and Shfichut Damim, and arguably we can accuse them of all three of them. I know that there's one of them that you didn't notice. Which one was that? When he tells them, get rid of all of the idolatry when they get to Beit El. He says, separate yourselves from all the idolatry, which maybe is a little strange to you. But we have idolatry there. We have murder taking place. The terrible rabbinic joke is, which only rabbis can use, and it's not funny, so don't try this at home. The terrible joke is, why did Shimon and Levi insist that they have a bris milah before they kill them? I mean, there's lots of ways you can go and kill them. So the answer is that they wanted to convert them because they figured that no one's going to care if a bunch of Jews got killed. Otherwise, there would be a UN investigation and so on, and a committee and a subcommittee this way. But you have a murder taking place of an entire city. And I'm not saying that there's no way of explaining and justifying it. So I'm just saying at face value. Yaakov certainly wasn't happy with it. And then you have the action of Reuven. I mean, just think about it for a second. When we compare Reuven with Esav, so Esav basically doesn't do anything wrong, but he gets every single bad thing ascribed to him. Reuven actually, it says he did something really wrong. Where it says, no, whoever says that, she Reuven chota ein la toa. Which, by the way, the obvious conclusion is not. The Gemara never says he didn't do it. The Gemara says, don't talk about it. Kol ha'omer Reuven chota ein la toa. Doesn't say he didn't do it. It says there's certain things you shouldn't talk about. Maybe Reuven's considered to be a Baal Tshuva. You shouldn't remind a Baal Tshuva of his sin. But there's enough places in Chazal, and I won't go more into that, that they don't seem to whitewash it. They understand exactly what happened over here. So we have over here, Yaakov would have had an opportunity to turn to Reuven and say, Reuven, what you did is more outrageous than anything Yishmael ever did. It's more outrageous than anything that Esav ever did. And he could have said, listen, it's just time to part ways. Secondly, when Shimon and Levi go and wipe out a city, Yaakov could have looked at them and saying, the behavior that you did, the way that you responded to a situation which probably should have been a small private family situation, was so outrageous, you're not part of this people. This is not the Judaism that we want to give over to the next generation. And I'll say it again, had Yaakov turned around to Reuven or Shimon or Levi, or we can go in sequence, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, so the first three of his Leah sons are now ready to be pushed away, we wouldn't have been totally shocked. Again, the only reason we're shocked is because it doesn't happen. And because it doesn't happen, then we're used to it not happening. And then because it doesn't happen, we tend to have an attitude towards, and maybe even the whitewashing attitude. No, it wasn't so bad, and so on and so forth. And again, if you need to, you can go look in the Rambam, and he justifies the behaviors of Shimon and Levi. If you need, you know, we can whitewash what Reuven did. But all that does not answer the bigger question or the observation. Just take a look what happened over here in this parsha and how Yaakov would have had good reason to say, you know, this is wrong. In terms of the Chumash, he slept with Bilhah. But because, when he got into bed with her, that's what they're referring to. But if you went to Yeshiva, which prospect would you go? But if you went to Beis Yaakov, if you went to Beis Yaakov, it didn't happen. And that's the advantage of a Beis Yaakov education, because you get a much purer. I mean, you don't know what the Chumash says. By the way, there's an English translation to Rashi, Rabbi Zilberman in the Old City is the same family, and he translated Rashi into English. If you look at his English translation of Rashi, any racy Rashi, right? That could be an article right there. Racy Rashi's. Any racy Rashi is not there in his English translation because it was pashnish for the Jewish kinder. They shouldn't see such things. That's what you looked at. Don't worry. That was an old teacher's trick. How are we going to get him to read this parak? Let's skip it and say it's not important. Anyway, let me continue then. So we have something which is interesting over here in terms of Yaakov's behavior. Yaakov over here doesn't respond at all. And I'll say it again. That's exactly my point. Which means it could well be that Reuven's reputation takes a little bit of a hit in Sefer Bereishit. It could be that Shimon's does. It could be that Levi's does. Levi later on becomes reformed. But as I said, all that doesn't concern me. What concerns me is a very simple thing. If we were to, I'm sorry for repeating myself. If we were to compare the behavior of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and the others who apparently had idolatry with them, we have the children of Yaakov being involved in Gilei Raya, Shfichotam, Avodah Zarah, and it all gets washed over completely, and actually we're fine with it, but somehow we get past it, and that's what's interesting. Now, where all this comes from, and this is part of what I want to get to, but try to paint a broad picture today. Where are we up to when we start the parasha? Yaakov is going to be reaching out to his brother, to Esav. And Yaakov doesn't necessarily know. I'm going to qualify what I'm going to say in a moment. Yaakov doesn't necessarily know what's going on in Esav's mind. So in order to explain that, let's go backwards again. When Yaakov left, Yaakov was sent away by both of his parents. His father said, go find a nice girl and get married. His mother told him, go run away from your brother who wants to kill you. This was the one time that the two of his parents told him to do the same thing, so he was finally able to listen to them both, even though there were different motivations. Rivka says, in the special way that anybody who comes from the Rivka love and family can say, go away, and she says, yamim achadim, go away for a couple of days. You're never sure from that family if you're talking about days or weeks or years or decades, right? When they, you know, work for a couple, finish this week, we'll get to next week, go away for a couple of days. It seems to be that it's probably where the Jewish old Chamesh Dakot comes from over here. Yeah, just another, you'll be there. Oh, sure. We'll be there tomorrow to do the renovations. Excellent. So, Rivka says, let him calm down, and then I'll send you a message. Now, we probably never hear that message. I'll allow for one possibility that we do. You have the one possibility. There's one possibility that we did hear the message, but from the Pshat and the Chumash, we don't see that Rivka ever sent a message, which has one of two possibilities. Neither one is good for Yaakov. Or when I say good, neither one is happy news. One, which is the obvious thing, is that he's never calmed down. And maybe the opposite is true. Maybe his anger has built up. And that's really where we start this week's parasha. When Yaakov tries to send some gifts, Yaakov tries to be nice, Yaakov's, you know, trying to be brotherly, respectful, look at the Ramban in source number 3, V'daki akavod hazeh sheYaakov oseh la'achiv bipachdato. You should know that the honor that Yaakov does for his brother out of fear, lomar adoni v'avdecha, calling him master and he's the servant, barvorki aminhag b'tse'ir l'teit ma'ala v'kavod ala b'chor ki'ilu hu aviv. That there's a certain etiquette in treating the older brother as almost as if he's the father. So he's saying is that Yaakov is, you can say, going out of the way, or he's making sure to give Esav his due, his respect, his honor, and so on. But why? But Ramban told you exactly why. Because he's terrified. So I just want to go back a little bit before this. Yaakov's terrified before he sends the message. Yaakov's terrified because he hasn't heard from his mother. So what's the second possibility? One possibility is that he's never calmed down. The other possibility is that his mother is dead. So I'm saying that neither possibility is wonderful. I will allow for a third possibility, and that is, as I said, very subtle, not clear in the text. We're told someplace along the way over here that Devorah Mineket Rivka dies. Who is she? Here's one of the great examples. We're only told about the person's death. We're never told about their life. Well, maybe we're hinted about their life that she was the nurse of Rivka. What does she have to do with anything? So if you want to create a whole theory, but as I said, this is building a lot on very little, you can say that Rivka did send a message. Now, who's she going to send it with? She'll send it with somebody who originally came from that place. So who's that? That was the, and there was somebody she can trust more than anyone. So when Rivka left home, we're told that they sent with her her nurse or her maid, whatever it may be. So then she sends this woman back who goes to Yaakov, tells Yaakov that you can come back now. By the way, you realize I'm making all of this up, right? Because all it tells us that she died. The question is, what in the world is she doing there? Unless you want to say quite the opposite, that she was not the one that had accompanied Rivka, and the opposite is that Yaakov meets her and says, let me bring you back to my mother. But she then never makes it there. So I'm just saying, I have very, very little evidence, and I can build all kinds of theories with it, but I will recognize the possibility that there is that third possibility there, that maybe she was the one. I once mentioned this to one of Rabbi Soloveitchik's grandsons, I think it was Mayor Lichtenstein, and he goes, oh, my grandfather, Soloveitchik, has a whole theory about this. He decided there was a secret underground railroad where information would go, and thing messages go back and forth, and that's what her job was. Okay. So I'm very happy to know that Rabbi Soloveitchik thought along the same lines, but I don't know exactly what to do with it. Yeah.
Because it says she died, and they buried her under the tree, and they all cried for her. That's a great covenant. You don't see it given to most people there in the Chumash. Why was she given covenant if she simply remained there all the time and was a nobody? So it sounds like she was a somebody.
Right.
Somebody significant.
Right. As I said, little pieces of evidence, and then we can build our entire theories over that. Okay, so you have something to say Friday night. Good. I want to move back to another strange thing in Yaakov's life. When Yaakov comes to Laban's home, this we discussed last week, he sees Rachel, he falls in love, he wants to marry her, and he offers to work for 7 years. So that's what we spoke about last week, that he didn't have money, so work for 7 years, because he didn't have the dowry, he didn't have the camels, he didn't have the jewelry. So he works. But then what happens afterwards, I mean, I hope you find it as disturbing as I do. And what happens is that Lavan pulls a switch on him, and Lavan sends, right, it's in source 11. V'yahav Yaakov et Rachel. Now pay attention. Love is mentioned over here beforehand. V'yomer, and he offers, evdecha sheva shanim b'rachel b'itcha ketana, and he offers that I work for 7 years. V'yomer Lavan, which is a very strange answer. Tov titi ota lach mititi ota le'ish acher. Okay? Better for me to give it to you than someone else, which is a very strange thing. So this is the flip side of this attitude towards time, is that, no, just a couple days. They looked like a couple days for him. But it's the same phenomenon. It's that Rivka says, okay, a couple days, I'll call for you. A couple of days is what it seems like. By the way, you can just as easily say the opposite. When you really love somebody and you have to work for 7 years, each day feels like an eternity. So over here, the 7 days feels like days, which is, again, just a very, very interesting statement. Vayom Yaakov of Lavan, and this is also, I'm sure, when you were in Beis Yaakov, that they cleaned this up a little bit. Hava et ishti kamalu yamai, vavo eleha. Which I won't translate. Very, very forward. Vayosef Lavan et kol anshei. Vayesof Lavan et kol anshei hamakom. Vayas mishte. So Lavan's always ready for a mishta. When they run away at the end, he complains, why didn't you tell me you were leaving? We would have made a party. Lavan is a party animal. Pasukav gimel, v'yi be'er v'yikachat le'ya bitov yaveyoto elav v'yavo eleha. V'yitin Lavan et zilpa shivchato le'ya bito shivcha. By the way, there are those who claim that Zilpa was in reality the maidservant of Lavan. It says shivchato, but she was the one who looked after Bill. She was the one who looked after Rachel. So that was part of the way of fooling him. Because again, it's not Leah's shivchato, but she was the one, her job in the house was to look after Rachel, so that's part of the way that he fooled Yaakov. So as I said, I did find a midrash like this. So let's just think a second. Rachel probably knows that she's getting married that night. Yes? one would hope. And Rachel probably, I mean, what do they do with Rachel? Guess what? You just won two tickets to a cruise. You know, go away for a couple of days. And Rachel's in on it. One second. Rachel is in on this. You can argue with me all that you want. And you know what I'm going to say? I don't care. Rachel is in on this. Leah is in on this. Yes, one second. Leah is in on this. How in the world does Yaakov stay married to Leah after the whole marriage is a deception? Why doesn't Yaakov in the morning, we're going to see what happens when he gets up in the morning, why doesn't Yaakov slam on the table and look at Lavan and say, Lavan, you are a dishonest individual. That is what we call in halacha a mekach ta'ut, or for some of you, a mekach tos. This is no marriage. I never married that woman. I worked 7 years for Rachel Bita HaKtana. There's all kinds of midrashim about that. He used to call Leah Rachel, so therefore he wasn't lying. And it doesn't say Tzi'ira, so it says that Leah, according to the Spanish, Leah was shorter than Rachel. So it was shorter, so therefore Bita HaKtana. Therefore, your shorter daughter. So no, this is, I always call her Rachel. I always Rachel, my shorter daughter. So I don't need any of the midrashim. We have three people who lied over here. By commission, by omission, however you want it. And who were those three people? Lavan, who we decided last week we would never buy a used car from. Leah and Rachel. How in the world does Yaakov stay in this relationship? How does Yaakov stay and want to have anything to do with Leah anymore, who's involved in this deception? But there's one other person who was involved in this deception, and that's Rachel. How in the world does he ever... How do you build a relationship with Rachel, who sort of... fooled you on the wedding night in a very unfortunate way? I mean, this is bizarre. Now Yaakov does complain. V'yihi baboker pasuk kaf hei v'hinei hileya v'yomer olavan mazot asiti li halo b'rachel avadati imach v'lama rimitani. By the way, it's almost Yaakov here sounds like Avimelech turning around and complaining to Avraham, like what did you do? How did you do such a thing? V'yomer olavan. And Naomi loves this pasuk. Vayomer Lavan lo yaseh kein bimkom matenu. By us, we don't do such things. Lateta tzira lefnei abichira. Of course, what is it that he's referring to? Either knowingly or not knowingly, but we assume he said it in such a nice way. We assume he knows it. Look at the Beis Halevi in source 12. Lo yaseh kein matenu lateta tzira lefnei abichira. Kinter oto biremes kaomer, if shar bimkom chem amin hakem lak dimat seir lefnei abachor, avu bimkomenu lo yasechein. Maybe where you come from, the younger brother can impersonate the older brother, but by us, the older one takes precedence over the younger one. Now, I just want to say one thing about Yaakov, and then we'll be able to understand where we are in this week's parasha, because I know I'm going backwards. And at this point, Yaakov reminds me of a certain character in a Dostoevsky novel. He's done his crime, and now he's seeking out his punishment. And he embraces his punishment. He knows he deserves it. And, you know, if you were not a religious individual, you would look at what just now happened and say, okay, this was karma, right? But we believe in karma, but we spell it differently. We spell it hashkacha. This is, he's getting paid back. He stole a bracha for wealth. He's got no money. He's been enslaved for 7 years. And by the way, work another 7 years. So he works another 7 years. What's also, to me, particularly interesting, continue. Malei shavua zot v'nele gam, and we never know what shavua means over here. V'nele gam et zot ba'avoda asher ta'avodi madi od shav shanim achei rot. And that's absurd. Work another 7 years, I'll give you this one. But he already worked for her. And Yaakov doesn't complain. And that's what I'm going to say. Yaakov knows he deserves this. V'yas Yaakov ken v'mali v'yimalei shavua zot v'itein lo et Rachel bito lo li'isha. So we never know if that shavua is the 7 years of the week or whatever. V'itein lavan Rachel bito et bil hashivchato la l'shivcha v'yavo gam el Rachel v'yahav gam et Rachel mileya. And he loved her more than Leah. The love is still there. Why is the love there anymore? He loved her before the whole episode. He loves her after the episode. He loves her while he's working. He continues to love her. So if I'm not mistaken, let me explain to you the love that Yaakov has for Rachel. Somebody asked me this week, They said, what was the difference? I had mentioned in a shir, I believe, more than once, that the first time we find a spouse loving one another is when Yitzchak meets Rivka and he loves her. So it says that, of course she tricked him. Women do that all the time. You don't know that wives, you don't know that wives do that? Yeah.
No.
Maybe
then.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk later. So, yeah. Let's try again. Rivka is loved by Yitzchak, and Yaakov loves Rachel. So, what exactly is the nature of each of these, you want to call it emotions? Are they the same? By the way, I can very easily say, love is not something that we can understand intellectually. That love is not something which we understand. Love is an emotion. How can I begin to explain the emotion? But it may very well be that when Yitzchak looks at Rivka, he knows, he's told by the Eved, all everything would happen. And what happened? She ran out, she brought water, she acts just like Avram Avinu. There's little Avram in her. And he loves her because he loves his father, which means it's the value system. On the other hand, what does Rashi say? As soon as she walks into the tent of his mother, so then all of these magical things return, so she has the same kind of impact like his mother. So therefore, the best qualities of both of his parents are standing there in his spouse, and that's what he sees and that's what he loves. So when it comes to Yaakov and Rachel, so what is it? It's over here, as I tried to claim last week, is that Yaakov doesn't have any money, he doesn't have everything, he just needs to try to prove that he's the son of Rivka. So he runs out with the water and brings the water to Rachel to show that he was really deserving of her hand. So now what? But why does he love her? So I want to go back to the values that Yaakov received from his two parents, because they were conflicting values. The value that he got from Rivka was based upon her inside information, which was based upon her prophecy, was that forget about your brother, you're the chosen one. You're the one who the lineage will continue. You're the one who the promise to Avram will come to fruition. And just forget about him. He's not part of the story. On the other hand, we find Yitzchak, and I want to understand Yitzchak now, because that's going to help us put everything else together. Yitzchak is somebody that when he's a child, very, very young, his family falls apart. And the reason his family falls apart is because of him. Which means his mother sees that his brother's laughing, making fun, or whatever, kicks him out of the house. Which means Yitzchak has to deal with his family, which is unwhole. It's unwhole because of him. He has that responsibility. By the way, you can say, what do you mean you have the responsibility? It's not you. It's Yishmael's behavior. Nonetheless, we found it very interesting that the place that Yitzchak then goes to pray is Be'er Lachai Ro'i. That's where Yishmael and his mother had their religious experiences. The Medrash tells us that he's the one who brings back Hagar to his father. Yitzchak is somebody who tries to bring the family together. Yitzchak, who when he was born, the family falls apart. He tries to bring the family together. That's what Yitzchak is. So Yitzchak's attitude towards his own family is that we are family. We need to have one another's backs. We need to protect one another. We are over here in a sea of Canaanites, in a sea of people who are from an alien culture. We need to be together and take care of one another, because if we don't take care of one another, no one else will. So over here, I have a tragic conflict between the two parents, whereby Yitzchak is coming and saying, one for all for one, you guys are together and support one another, where Rivka comes and says, yeah, that's true, except for Esav, and you can't trust him, and just forget about it. So now, when I move over to Yaakov looking for a wife, and he finds out that on his wedding night, his wife was concerned about her sister's embarrassment, and therefore was willing to step aside that her sister shouldn't be embarrassed. As much as we look at this as being an absolute outrage, he saw equality over there, which he thought was unbelievable. This is how we're going to build a people. This is how we build a family. This is part of my father's dream, which could finally come true. Tragically, that dream could not have come true with Esav, but it can come true now. Which means if Leah and Rachel have each other's back to such an extent, that's exactly the life that he never had. That's the life that his father never had, because it never did get along with Yishmael. That's the life that he never had, because he never really did get along with Esav. So when you realize that the very reasons that we would feel that this is an outrage, they can act in such a way, Yaakov is looking at this and sees a quality over here, which, you know, these children will have one another's back. You go over now to the story of Shimon and Levi. So what did Shimon and Levi do? Their sister was attacked, and they said, we have your back. We're not going to let this happen. You're our sister. We're not going to ignore such a thing. Which means as upset as Yaakov could be, he sees within this a quality which is nonetheless. Again, Yaakov's whole argument with it is a pragmatic argument. But I'm so small a number and all these people are going to attack me. How can we possibly do this? This is an absurd way to behave right now, but not on a value judgment. I mean, despite the Ramban and others who say that that's absolutely terrible what they did, Yaakov doesn't say it himself. Yaakov is more focused initially. Later on, we can look at the Brachot, what he says. And what's interesting is, I don't think he ever saw Mechirat Yosef coming. Because his thinking was, well, if Rachel, who's more loved, can get along with Leah, and Leah can get along with Rachel, then when he loves Yosef more, it's just an extension of the same thing, and it's going to work out. You know, the episode with the Dudaim last week, look at the commentary of Rav Hirsch. I don't believe a word of what he says is true over there. But he says that the whole back and forth, oh, you stole my husband, now you're taking the Dudaim. Rav Hirsch says the whole thing was said in a loving, ironic, two sisters who get along, joking with one another manner. I don't believe he's right, but I love the suggestion because what he's identifying is what I think Yaakov does see. Again, whether it happened or not, I don't know. But I think that's part of what Yaakov sees, that look at these sisters can get along to this extent. They have one in this bag. That's how we're going to create a people. We're going to create a people when we care about one another, that we're going to protect one another. So does Yaakov ever anticipate that we're going to get to Mechirat Yosef, which now, by the way, you didn't think it was possible? Mechirat Yosef just got worse. Why is it worse? Because he thought that these kids all get together, even though he has a favorite, even though he has one who's going to be the leader, even though he has one who's most capable. But he never saw it happening, that not only will they not have his back, that they're going to stab him in the back. That he never anticipated, because this is the kind of family that he's trying to bring. Which leads us now to the beginning of this week's parsha. Yaakov has undergone a metamorphosis. The Yaakov who felt that he should be punished, and the Yaakov who felt that he deserves what he gets, disappeared at some point in last week's parsha. And I can tell you exactly the day that it happened. The day that it happened, Chumash says it, was the day that Yosef was born. The day that Yosef was born, he says, time to go home. What was it about the birth of Yosef? That's conjecture. The day that Yosef is born, right? I mean, you've noticed that it's the exact same pasuk or no? The day that Yosef is born, he says, okay, now it's time to go back. What happened to all the fears? What happened to his brother wants to kill him? It's changed. And at that point, instead of being subservient to Lavan, he starts giving Lavan a little taste of his own, what do you give somebody a taste of? Medicine. His own medicine. He plays Lavan the way that Lavan's been playing him, and he walks off with everything. And that's not the same Yaakov that showed up there. Because the Yaakov who showed up there was a Yaakov who was seeking his punishment, and now Yaakov's gotten over that. Who performed the therapy on Yaakov, how this worked out, how he woke up one morning and said, Chalas. So she's saying in Hebrew, must speak. Enough. But somehow Yaakov, it's not the same Yaakov anymore. And the Yaakov who ran away is replaced by a Yaakov who's now willing to go back. Now, Yaakov is willing to go back is the one that we're meeting in this week's parsha, and now we have all the background to it. Now we're ready to move forward, and let's start again from the very beginning of this week's parsha. V'yishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv arzeh seir sedei Edom. First thing about Yaakov is he takes initiative. This is not the Yaakov who sneaks out of the middle of the night. This is Yaakov who's walking, I'm going to walk in through the front door. That's very beginning, source number one. I'm going to walk in through the front door. And I want to be treated accordingly. Many years ago, one of the popes came to visit Israel. Before the Pope ever recognized, or the Vatican recognized the existence of Israel, snuck in the middle of the night from Jordan and came to some holy sites, and some were on the Jordanian side, some on the Israeli side, and the official response was that the chief rabbis didn't want to meet. It says, you want to come through the front door, we'll talk to you. This is not a dignified way of having a state visit, of sneaking in through through Jordan and trying to be, because the Vatican did not recognize the existence of the state of Israel, because that was theologically problematic for them. It still is. But they try to make believe we're not here. Yaakov at this point sends a message. So now you realize the complexity. On the one hand, he's taking initiative. On the other hand, he's being deferral, right?
Deferential.
He's saying, Adoni Esav, Koamar Avdecha Yaakov. And that's exactly what the Ramban was commenting on. Okay, this is the way you treat an older brother, but he's scared. Imlovan Garti Vechar Atab. Giving, oh, by the way, you know, the reason you haven't seen me in the last 34 years, I was busy. but it's over. I'm saying, what's over? His being afraid, well, maybe afraid is the wrong word, his not willing to confront him is over. V'yili shor v'chamor, tzon v'eved v'shivcha. Now, that's also interesting. Yaakov probably in the past had a far more complicated, conflicted view of his wealth, or anything that he would have acquired, because that was part of the bracha that he stole. Now again, just turns around to Esav, by the way, I got a lot of stuff now. And I'm saying that that itself is a very interesting statement. What I want you to see is that this is not the same Yaakov. This is not the same Yaakov that we've seen before. This is a man, he's cautious, he's pragmatic, but he knows who he is. Which is also interesting. He has already been coming. He is coming. He's on the way to see you. And Esav is coming together with his goons, probably his army with goons. Goons is a good word. And he's coming to see you. And that, by the way, is reason to be afraid. And Pasachet says, "Vayira Yaakov ma'od v'yetzelo," and Yaakov was very afraid. So again, I just want to point out about this new Yaakov, meaning the old Yaakov runs away in the middle of the night. The new Yaakov is very pragmatic, but part of being pragmatic is that you're in a lot of trouble. Okay, that's part of the reality, and he responds accordingly. He divides. Look at source number 6, Siman Gimel, which is towards the end of 6. This is in Medrash Rabbah. Vayachatz et ha'am, lindetcha Torah derech eretz, shel yadam noten komino bezavit echad. What's the idiom in English for that? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Now, those of you who still live in Chutz La'aretz, it's a very interesting midrash, saying that we need to keep some Jews in the galut, because you can't put all... I'm sorry, I know you normally get Zionist... talk out of me, but it's very interesting, this midrash, and at which time it must have been presented, where it says, you know, you can't put all your eggs in one basket. The Jewish people, put all of them in one place, will be in trouble. I assume that this was when there was a strong diaspora and a very weak existence in Israel. I'm not convinced that's the case right now, but who am I to talk about politics? Yeah, I'm just saying it's interesting that it uses this Yaakov's division over here, but let's go back and look at the Pasuk again. Yaakov then... Yes, okay, here we'll have the Zionist diatribe, yeah? Let's continue. And then Yaakov does as follows. Vayomer... So it's interesting. I've always imagined that the Shnei Machanot was something positive. I'm not convinced it's positive after everything I've said today about being one family, being together, being unified. Now Yaakov is lamenting that I've become two different machanot, because that, look what I've had to do just in order to have the chance of survival. By the way, when Yaakov, again, so just so far, Yaakov takes a strategic move, dividing. Now he takes a religious move and he prays. Go back to Midrash Rabbah. Naomi, this is for you now. And Siman Bet, because we went straight to Siman Gimel. Now look at Siman Bet. Davar acher vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo, Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Eli, that was one of the five later students of Rabbi Akiva, lo hiyira lo hitzara, ela vayira shelo yaharog, vayetzer lo shelo yahareg. So here we have our post-Bar Kokhba rebellion attitude. No, he wasn't afraid. He was afraid that he was going to kill or be killed, but it's much more military. Amar im humit kaber alai, hergeni, v'im ani mitkaber alav, ani hergo. This is going to be a fight to the death. Hadu v'yira shelo yareg, v'yetzlo shelo yehareg. Amar kol ha'shanim halalu, yoshev be'eretz Yisrael, tomo shehu bo alai mikoach yeshivat eretz Yisrael. Kol ha'shanim halalu, hu yoshev u'machabed et horav, tomo shehu bo alai mikoach kibud av'eim. So over here it says, what's the fear? The fear is that Esav has more schar, but not just as we always remember it, because he has the schar of being with his parents, being able to take care of his parents, that he also has the schar because he's been living in the land of Israel. So therefore, that's part of what scares Yaakov, is that I've been living up in by Lavanville, and I don't have the schar of honoring my parents, and I don't have the schar of being in Eretz Israel. So I'm saying that the Medrash over here identifies that Yaakov's fear is one that he may be undeserving to be victorious. So now he's divided everything up, and he's prayed, and sends more gifts to Esav. And I want to skip all the way to Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Vayakom b'laylahu, and he gets up in the middle of the night. Vayikach et shnei nashav et shnei shivchatav v'tachad es yodo v'yavor et ma'avar yabok. Vayikachem v'yavirem et hanachal v'yaver et asher lo. So Yaakov divides everything up, and then, if that's what it means, are they still two machanot or no? And then it says vayivater Yaakov levado. So now, if there's still two machanot, then Yaakov has a decision to make, which all of you would have thought is an easy decision. What's the decision? So where should he be? So of course he should be Rachel, because that's more romantic than he should be Rachel, because he loves Rachel. But why is he all by himself? So there's a Rashbam, and that's probably everything I've done today is in order to get to this Rashbam. There's a Rashbam that grapples with this, and he says something which I'm just not exactly sure what to do with, and what we'll see. We'll start in source number 7, but you'll see source number 7 is the Rashbam on Pasuk Hey and Yud and Yud Aleph and Yud Bet and Yud Gimel and Kaf Aleph and Kaf Gimel and Kaf Hey and Kaf Vav and so on and so forth. It's the Rashbam, essentially almost everything he says on this parak. So, Vitzavotam Lehim Watzivotam Va'omar Lehim Kotam Rum V'Hashluchim Liyodu Da'agatol Sheyakov. The Yaakov was very cool and collected when he sent the messengers, because he didn't want the messengers to communicate any kind of So just interesting in terms of strategy over here. He tries as calmly as possible because he knows that they're going to end up repeating, but not, I mean, sometimes people not only repeat the words you say, sometimes they also repeat the emotions that you are giving off. So Yaakov tries to hide his fear. Im lovon garti, kasher yadata b'mitzvat avi v'mi, shelo yuchshov b'shvili barach. I went there with Lavan because I was listening to my parents. By the way, just read between the lines now. What is Yaakov saying? That in effect, the whole time I've been there, what have I been doing? Obeying my parents, doing kibud av'aim. So I'm just saying this is real interesting in terms of the backdrop that we just saw in the Mishnah, that Yaakov himself is afraid, but Yaakov is trying to spiritually counter Esav's feelings of superiority. Oh, you've been there at your parents. I've been obeying my parents the whole time. I don't want you to think that I ran away. By the way, notice the word that he uses. Shelo yichshov b'shvili barach. Don't think I ran away because of some kind of personal issue, you know, as if I were afraid, right? You like the way he hides his fear. I wasn't afraid. My mother was afraid. My mother said he's going to kill me. My mother said run away. No, but all that he doesn't want there. He doesn't want that communicated. But the word you should be focusing on, but you don't know it yet, is which word? The word, obviously, I put in bold. And which one is that? Barach. Continue. Elokei Avi Avraham, Elokei Avi Yitzchak, Shavtachtani, B'lashon Zeh, B'tzeti Mi Be'er Sheva, V'yomar Shem, Elokei Avraham, Aviv, and so on. Let's skip a little bit. Page 3. Pasuk Kaf Aleph. So just look for a second what Kaf Aleph actually said. It said, V'amartem gam hinei avdecha Yaakov acharenu, ki amar ach pera panav mincha olecha lefanav acharenu, ira panav ulai yisa panai. That Yaakov is sending gifts, and just keep sending gifts, and just say, Yaakov's in back. He's all the way in the back. But look what the Rashbam now says. By the way, those of you who don't know, the Rashbam is a grandson of Rashi. We had all kinds of intrigue during those times, the First Crusade, the Second Crusade. This is the background of the community that they're from. You have so many people that were killed, that is why most likely they instituted the Kaddish Yassam, because there are so many children who have to say Kaddish. Instead of just being part of the Davin, kids who were too young to be the Shliach Tzibur, who had to say Kaddish. So in Pasuk of Aleph, it writes, Kimarch Parapanav, Kein Chashav Yaakov Belibo, Ve'ein Zemidivrei Shluchim, maybe I'll have some success here, Ve'gam Hineni Hu Acharenu, and just say he's in back of us. Why? Lefi Sherotze Yaakov Levroach Belaila, Derech Acheret, Im Lomnei She'ikvu Hamalach. Wow. Do you realize what he just now said? I know. He just now said that Yaakov was going to run away. That Yaakov divides the whole camps up over there, and Yaakov's by himself. And Yaakov was about to run away. And what stopped him from running away? The Malach. We never knew what the Malach is doing there. And look, the Malach is really interesting. And just in case you're not clear, it's a malach based on the pshat and the chumash. The pshat and the navi, it says it's a malach, right? The navi comes back and talks about it at the end of source number 4 in Hosea. Bibeten akavit achiv. Right? In utero, you held on to your brother. Akavit achiv, you held on to your brother. Uva ono sarah et Elohim. And when you were of your full strength, you wrestled with a, I don't know how you want to translate Elohim, one of power. V'yasar el malach, right? You defeated this malach, Yisrael. V'yasar et malach. V'yuchal, you were successful. Bacha, the angel started to cry. You like the interpretation here? V'tchananlo, and the angel pleaded, let me go, I have to go already. And you can read the rest of the translation over here. So what is this malach doing over here? So again, the malach wrestles with Yaakov. So in utero is when we had the foreshadowing, the last source on page 4. In utero, we had the foreshadowing of Yaakov wrestling. With Esav, he never wrestles. Right? He avoids it with Esav, but he does with this malach, who at least according to Chazal is the Saro Shel Esav. So now we ask ourselves, so why in the world does this have to happen over here? So the Rashbam says, because he was trying to run away. He had built up this whole elaborate plan. Okay, I'm going to try to bribe him. I'm going to try to send him gifts. I'm going to talk tough. But if push comes to shove, I'm out of here. Now, is this disturbing to any of us? Or yeah, because, I accept that. But by the way, he continues to say this all the way through his interpretation over here, is that he wanted to run away. He wanted to run away. That was his plan. And just in case we're not so clear about this, go back to source number 9. Source number 9, when Rivka is told, again, that's exactly what we see, but you got the Rivka divrei Esav b'nah gadol, v'tishlach v'tikar Yaakov b'nah katan. By the way, in this instance, they're both her children. She's still the mother of both of them, and we've never really gotten inside her head, because it must be very conflicted, because she has this prophecy. Vatomer elav yinei Esav achicha mitnachem lecha lahargecha vato b'nishma b'koli v'kum b'rach lecha. Which word is used? Run away. When we go later on, in source number 13, towards the end, what does it say in Pasuk of Aleph? Vayivrachu v'chol asher lo v'yokom v'yavor etanahar. The Yaakov ran away. Which means sometimes the problem with our current behavior is the choices that we see in front of us. But sometimes the choices that we see in front of us are dictated and formed or informed by decisions that we've made in the past. Is that we get into times of crisis, we tend to fall into patterns of behavior. And there's no question whatsoever that Yaakov right here is in crisis, but what the Rashbam is identifying is that what he wants to do is he wants to run away. He doesn't succeed in running away, but he wants to run away. So if we have to ask ourselves, well, why does he run away? Because that's what Yaakov does. Yaakov avoids conflict. Right? One second. Pay attention to that. Yaakov avoids conflict, and he runs away. He ran away from Esav, and he ran away from Lavan. Although, and this is really what I want to focus on today, there was a difference between the two. When Yaakov ran away from Esav, he ran away, again, to save his life, which, by the way, takes us right where we are right now. But that's a different Yaakov. The Yaakov that ran away from Lavan is somebody who's gone through changes. Yes, he went through his guilt. He dealt with his guilt. He got past his guilt. And now he was okay in how he deals with Lavan, but he doesn't want the confrontation. Which means this avoidance of confrontation is very different from the other avoidance of confrontation. But it's interesting the Torah uses the same word in both cases, Barach. But it's interesting that in both cases, Yaakov just goes back to the same mode of behavior. The suggestion that Yaakov fights with himself, whenever I say it, everyone says, yeah, everybody says this. When I wrote it in my first book, and I searched, I didn't find anybody saying it. And now everybody says, yeah, everybody says this. I don't know who the everybody is. The strongest evidence that I used there was that it says that Vayavater Yaakov Vado Vayavik Ish Imo. So he's all by himself. Vayavik Ish Imo, and a man wrestles with him. So you're all by yourself. So who's wrestling with him? So the only problem is figuring out who the Ish is. So the day that Yaakov made all of his money, what does it say? Vayefrot ha'ish ma'od ma'od. Vayulush v'chot v'chamarim v'gamalim, and so on and so forth. The man burst forth exceedingly, and now he made it. Which means the Yaakov who becomes very wealthy is the Yaakov who he wrestles with. And ultimately, that's where we need the resolution. And ultimately, that's where Yisrael emerges from. But 100%, that's what I'm trying to get to, that Yaakov who ran away is not the same Yaakov. First of all, that Yaakov who ran away, he was still Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim. And Yaakov at that point was just not ready for conflict. And Esav would have eaten him up. And his mother knows it and says, run away, because you don't have a chance. This Yaakov came back and is ready to face Esav. But he's ready to face Esav, but he's not crazy. Because Esav, by the way, Esav is one thing. Esav and 400 other people is a whole other thing. Which means, maybe I think I can speak to Esav, maybe I think I can be strong to Esav, but if Esav is just coming for battle, that's going to be very challenging. By the way, he's successful. End of the day, he's successful. The Rashbam's take on this is that Yaakov was ready to run away, I think is fascinating, because it's saying that even though the personality has undergone a transformation, even though Yaakov has gone, right, we started with Dostoevsky, we can move over to Kafka, he's undergone a metamorphosis, he is not the same Yaakov that there was before, but that doesn't mean that the old Yaakov is completely gone. Is that a clear enough sentence? Which means there is a part of him that when push comes to shove, I'm out of here. Whether it's an elevated, I'm out of here, because if I'm not here for him to... By the way, the other way is that he can just go and confront him and be killed and everyone else. But Yaakov separating from the whole camp and being by himself is something which is incredibly questionable. What happened over here? I mean, Chazal say he was go looking for the Pachim Ketanim. He was looking for the cans of soda that he can return to the Makola the next day and get the 25 Agarot. I mean that's such a strange comment, but it may actually be a comment of saying, okay, even though Yaakov's become wealthy right now, he still has the sensibility of some, he's not frivolous, which means he sees wealth in a very different way than some people do. He doesn't see wealth in terms of I can show it off and I can be flashy about it and I can tell everybody else how wealthy I am. Yaakov still understands exactly what 25 agarot are, maybe the way that a man was enslaved for 14 years understands the value of even little things. But that actually, that statement of Chazal may be very much part of who this Yaakov is right now. Has Yaakov completely changed or he's not changed? So the thing about Yaakov getting the new name, becoming Yisrael, the one who deals with God and heavenly things, but he becomes Yisrael, but he never stops being Yaakov. I mean, that's exactly the issue that I think that we're beginning to understand now. That Yaakov becomes somebody new, but it isn't stopping the old one. The old Yaakov has evolved as well. Again, definitely an evolution is taking place. Look, how many of us want to be the same when we're 20 as when we're 60, when we're 60, when we're 80? I mean, we go through changes in our life. Yaakov has gone through changes. Yaakov was somebody, again, if I'm not mistaken, what I was trying to show today, Yaakov is somebody who, on the one hand, at one point felt he was deserving of mistreatment. And on the other hand, as ironic as this may be, when he sees what Rachel and Leah did, A, he thinks he deserves it, which is why he's able to get past that right away, and then say, wow, look how beautiful it is that they have one another's back. You can only say that if you thought you were deserving it in the first place. If you thought you were not deserving it, you can never get to that second point. So he sees, yeah, these two can get together. These two will be able to build a nation together. The children coming out of this will be one people. That's an unbelievable thought for Yaakov to be able to have. But nonetheless, what the Rashbam identifies is that every time that we're going to have pressure, difficult situation, Yaakov runs away. Yaakov Barach, we can call it. Yaakov runs away. He doesn't want conflict. Nonetheless, God says to him, sorry, you're going to have conflict, and sends this malach. You need to confront your fear. I'm going to say it again. Yaakov was partially willing to confront his fear with fear when he goes to meet with Esav, but it's just got a little scary. Meaning, Yaakov can't come back to Israel. Let's be really clear about this. Yaakov can't come back to Israel, and when Yosef is born, it's time for me to go back. Isn't it interesting that Yosef is the most confident person we ever will meet in Tanakh, and the day that he's born, he gives his father confidence as well. Right? Yosef is just totally full of confidence. Second Yosef is born, Yaakov suddenly has confidence. Okay, we can do it. Let's go. We're going back now. At this point, to Lavan. Okay, pay the bill now. What bill? I've been working for years. Give me the money now. Where did all this come from? Now Yaakov can say, okay, it's time to go back to Israel. This is mine. God promised it to me. Which means until Yaakov has resolved all these conflicts and feelings of guilt, he can't go back to the land of Israel. You can't fight for something if you don't believe it's yours. But when you believe it's yours, then you can fight for it. And it doesn't mean, by the way, that it's smart to fight if the odds are overwhelmingly against you, which is exactly where we find Yaakov in the beginning of the parasha. He's willing to confront Esav. He's willing to stand up to him. He's willing to show him, look at all the money I have now. That's not the same Yaakov that ran away. But then there's these overwhelming odds. And we get to overwhelming odds, that's just too much for us. How in the world can we ever defeat overwhelming odds? And what does God say to Yaakov? Yeah, you can. You can. Don't be afraid of the overwhelming odds. Don't be afraid of fighting a malach. And that's really the story that takes place in this parsha. That Yaakov needs one more lesson. God sends him spiritual powers, which Yaakov can then defeat. That once Yaakov is able to defeat an angel, then he can face his demons. At that point, Esav is somebody who he can deal with. Because now he still will always be Yaakov, but now he's Yisrael. Now there's a whole new element to it. Now he's somebody who has this power. And now, you know what? Even if there's overwhelming odds, okay, it's not comfortable, it's not nice, but we're Yisrael. And being Yisrael, we can even be successful with overwhelming odds. And that's what happens in this week's parsha.